Hello and welcome to Being Well. I'm Forrest Hanson. If you're new to the podcast, thanks for joining us today. And if you've listened before, welcome back. I'm joined, as usual, by Dr. Rick Hanson. Rick is a clinical psychologist. He's a best-selling author, and he's also my dad. So, Dad, how are you doing today?
I'm good and thoroughly psyched about our topic.
Yeah, I've been really looking forward to this one. Today, we're going to be talking about what we wish we knew much earlier in life. We're focusing specifically on our 20s. For me, I'm reflecting on this from the perspective of somebody who's 30 years old. Rick's perspective is, let's just say, a little bit further along than that.
I'm in early, late middle age.
Early, late middle age. All right. Well, hey, do you have your AARP card yet, Dad?
I'm not going to answer that question.
is that excessively disclosing?
You can get it at age 55. So I would say I'm older than 55. I don't hide my age, so I'm 71.
71, yeah, great. But you're a young 71, Dad. You're a very youthful 71.
That's early, late, middle age.
Yeah, you're in great shape. You're doing great in life. You've got biceps. Yeah. You've been working out in your home gym. It's really all going great for you. So all jokes aside, I've come up with a list. Rick has come up with a list. And I actually don't know what he's going to say. So I'm really kind of excited to find out.
Vice versa.
Along with everyone else. Yeah, we've kept these hidden from each other. So we're going to be discovering along with our listeners here.
So first, let me first ask you, do you feel that you are old enough now to be able to reflect productively about what you wished you'd known when you were 21?
Yes. And here's why.
Okay.
I think that this is such a key moment in people's lives. This 10, 15 year period between, I'm 36 years old. So between when I was 20 and 36, 16 years, I feel so radically different these days from the person that I was back then. And that's part of the reason where I feel like I have enough space to look at it and go, man, if I had just fill in the blank, wow, I would have really saved myself a lot of pain along the way. And that's how I feel. I think that I already felt that way when I was like 28, 29. But certainly as a 36-year-old, I definitely feel that way. How about you, Dad? Do you feel like you can go into the time machine in that way and open your eyes when you were 21 and really still have a connection with that moment?
Absolutely. And this is a topic that I've reflected a lot about, both for myself, but also generally in that. Think about the decisions people make roughly 15 to 25. And those decisions of all kinds, do you get in the car with a drunk driving buddy when you're a junior in high school or not, right? And then as you start moving into leaving home, entering into adulthood, what kind of decisions do you make about just ruling out certain paths for you? Like your mom just ruled out when she was about 19 years old, pursuing pre-med and becoming a physician, you know, and that's a decision that she regrets now. So we make all kinds of decisions and choices, 15 to 25-ish, for better or worse, that are enormously consequential because the consequences span out over the rest of your lifespan. Except a person's capacities to make good decisions at that age tends to be really pretty limited by both the absence of good mentors, good resources, A, B, the absence of the kind of good judgment that can accumulate over time, partly due to the results of bad judgment.
Perspective, all that. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, yeah. So we have this disconnect between the consequences of choices made in the 20s and the capacities to make good choices. So I've thought a lot about the topic that we're going to get in today, which essentially is about wise 20s, you know, wisdom.
And I think there will be a lot of this for people who are not specifically in their 20s. You know, a lot of this is just reflection on earlier moments in life. So even if you are not yourself 26 years old, or if you don't have a kid who's 26 years old, whichever, you know, place you are in your life, I still think that there will be some stuff in here that you find helpful.
Yeah, just about that, really, just to add to it. You're exactly right. I think reflecting back on choices we made and just appreciating them, understanding them, no praise, no blame, just the facts.
For sure.
So let's dive in. I'm psyched.
So this is actually totally connected to something that you were just saying a second ago, which is this tension that we have in that moment in time between the ability to make good choices and the leverage that those choices have over the rest of our life. And for me, a lot of the choices that people make in their 20s, and certainly a lot of the choices that I made, had to do with this tension between two things that are both totally true. The first, you have more freedom now than you will ever have in the rest of your life. Generally, for most people these days, not in an attachment to a significant other. People are getting married later and later. They're having kids later and later. And that can create the feeling of our 20s as this decade of deferral, where we're sort of kicking the can down the road in a bunch of different ways. And it's sort of a free decade where you can just kind of do what you want, and you kind of wake up when you're 30 and go, okay, now it's time to take things seriously. And I think there's some truth to that, and there can be some value in that kind of a process for people of exploration. So on the one hand, you've got a ton of freedom. On the other hand, your choices today are highly leveraged through the rest of your life. The ROI, the return on investment that you get from anything that you do when you're 22, 23, 24, is also probably higher than the ROI you will have at any other moment in your life. Money grows exponentially. Your relationships get a lot stronger based on the learning you do about relationships now. Your friendships that you build today can have a very long tail of impact through the course of your life. So this is a very leveraged moment for people, but also one where it feels like you're kind of missing out if you're not taking advantage of all that freedom. And how people choose to balance that tension between those two different poles, I think just has enormous consequences for people. And I would nudge most people in the direction of you can really do both. But because there tends to be a cultural push in the direction of more freedom and more exploration, I sort of lead the other way a little bit, just from my own experience as somebody who did do a lot of wandering and exploring and just having a good time between the ages of like 22 and 27 or so. Man, if I had just done a little bit more effortful action, even if it were just between my own ears over that 5-year period, man, I think it would have saved me a lot of pain.
Forrest, that is a really interesting way to frame it, as this tension between having fun and building something.
Yeah.
Right? Short term, long term. And how do you balance that? Especially when in the 20s, you want to have fun and there are a lot of opportunities to have fun and your body wants to have fun at that age developmentally. And for many people, they've cycled through high school and kind of a grind, maybe college, maybe some other vocational training, and they're ready to have some fun.
Trapped with their parents. Yeah, totally.
What an interesting way to frame it. So I want to go a little to the work of Daniel Levinson, who studied adult development, really interesting stuff. And he talked about major themes. So one major theme is this rhythm of disorganization, reorganization, disorganization, reorganization. And we go through different rhythms like that. Great. He also really emphasized two things that I wish my 20-year-old version had been a lot better at. One of those is to get mentoring. Who are your mentors? Who are the people who can really advise you about opportunities for you that you had no idea even existed, or can help you really appreciate the point I'm about to make here, which is that whatever you invest in yourself, notably related to your career, but also yourself as a being, as a person psychologically, whatever you invest, the benefits of that will compound exponentially over your whole lifespan. But the cost of that investment, whatever that might be, the effort, the drag, from in my case, sleeping on the floor, eating noodle ramen, because you don't have any money, but you're still in college or something. Anyway, the cost of that, including the deferral of pleasure, will be amortized across the 50 years of your career. So mentors are the kind of people who can do that for you. I didn't seek out mentoring. I didn't even know it was possible. Okay, coach, mentor. Second major thing that Levinson talks about is the dream you had for your life when you were young, your dreams. And what are your life dreams? What are they really? In terms of family, work, where you live, who you're with, the kind of life you want to have, what you really invest in. And I had pretty formless, disorganized, chaotic life dreams coming out of college. And that created a big vacuum in which I got pulled this way and that, including 3 years and sort of half a cult is the way I put it. And all that kind of blew up my forward progress in my 20s related to career and occupation. So those would be two things I would just kind of call out for people. Appropriate mentoring, wise people who've been down that road before, and really clarifying for yourself your aims in this life, your vision. Mm. I mean, for me, career, really, ideally, I mean, sometimes people don't have the privilege of this option, but to the extent that your work is at this intersection of three circles, the rest is details. And the three circles are briefly, what do you love doing? What are you talented at? And what do you care about? And it took me 10 years easily to finally clarify, oh, I should be a therapist, because that's squarely at the intersection of those three circles for me.
Yeah, that was totally true for me as well. I did a lot of, as you know, wandering aimlessly when I was in my mid-20s, which was a fun process, but a lot of that was tied to really not having a strong sense of what I wanted to do. I was never the kid who knew that he wanted to be a firefighter or whatever else. And so I think that even just a couple of days of really solid, regimented inquiry into that question when I was 24 or something that I just kind of put off and put off and put off would have possibly had a really big impact on me and a really big impact on my outcomes. One of the most formative experiences, I think, of Elizabeth's life so far has been when you sat down with her and with one of your yellow legal pads went through the possibility of becoming a therapist and how much it would cost and could she actually do it? And because she had just never considered that as a possible outcome for her in life. And that mentorship is what really helped her get there and see it as a possibility for her. And now, you know, she's an associate therapist and doing great and totally loves it.
Yeah, that's right. The power of mentoring
and
seeking wise counsel.
Maybe attached to that, because we're already starting to talk about all these things that you can do or you should do to really get yourself in the trajectory you want to be when you hit 35 or whatever else. And so something that I do want to emphasize here, which I think I had a lot of anxiety about when I was in my 20s, is your life is not over if you are, quote unquote, behind when you're 30 years old.
Yeah.
Life is long. You got a lot of time. There is a lot of pressure on people, particularly young people, to excel in something right off the bat. Not everyone is a 30 under 30 type of person. But we have so much cultural pressure around that. And that's only getting a lot worse with the just enormous rise in influence of social media and the ways in which that has impacted people in terms of comparison of self to other. So the most important thing in your life is not actually that you are amazing at something when you're 24, 25, 26 years old. The most important thing in your life is that you're very, very good at getting better at things. Success is a moment in time. There are other moments in time in life. It keeps on going. And so the question is, can you keep on being good at getting better at things so you feel successful over the whole course of your life as opposed to just that success being tied to any one moment?
I'm going to put you on the spot.
Yeah, go ahead.
Let's see what happens here. So if you and I could go back in time and visit you as a 24-year-old. At that point, you'd graduated from UC Berkeley, not a small thing. And if we had asked you, okay, Forrest, what are several things that you are just naturally really talented at? How would you have answered that question?
I think I would have started with verbal communication. Just, I mean, you know, I've always felt good at being able to talk and think about ideas. I like to pull stuff apart and understand how it works. I have a real drive for comprehension. I don't know if I have quite as much of a drive for mastery, but I have a drive for being 95 to 98% good at something and really being competent.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think those are some things I would have pulled out.
Yeah, I would add another one that Mom and I saw from the really first few days, if not years of your life, in that you're very good at affirming people and finding what is good in people and supporting it. And
it's very sweet.
Just naturally a benevolent kind of person, a talent. And
thank you.
This question about talent is really useful because there many, many kinds of talents that we have, not just sort of reading, writing, arithmetic-based talents. And for many people, their talents are social or artistic or nonverbal or visual, spatial, mechanical, many, many different kinds of talents. And then another related question, which is actually even more important, if we had asked you when you were 24, what do you love doing?
Yeah, I think I would have had a harder time with that one.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. And I think that in some ways that was kind of the tricky part for me, is that I had this sort of amorphous capability, but I didn't really have an endpoint that it was directed in the pursuit of.
Mm, yeah.
I knew, you know, I certainly liked playing video games. I certainly liked being sociable with other people, being in groups. I was very extroverted. Yeah, I liked a lot of artistic pursuits of different kinds. I really enjoyed dancing. I loved music. I was very into those things. But that always felt kind of tangential from where my capability was. I felt like I was good enough at those things, but not, you know, a total profound talent at them. And I think that's that sort of disconnect between what I perceived as my capabilities and what I felt like I was into actually created a lot of uncertainty for me about what do I want to end up doing with my life. Does that seem more or less fair, Dad?
Yes. And I think there's a lesson in that for people too, in that some things we can love doing, but we're not wildly talented at them.
Sure.
And so you loved being around theater and music and dance.
Yeah. And I think I was in the top 30% of the distribution of capability.
Yeah,
of those
if
things.
Not the top 10 or 5%.
Yeah, maybe. But I was certainly not in the top 1%, let alone the 0.1%. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly right. So there are things that we can love doing, but we can be honest about our talents. Okay. But if you can find that intersection where someone's really talented at something, like you are really talented at interacting with people and getting to know them and sharing ideas and discourse. And of course, here we are in a podcast doing that together, right? So that's very much both a talent and something you love doing.
Yeah.
And then there'd be the question of at 24, what are your values? What do you care about? How do you want to help the world? And I want to say that for some people, that question is just not relevant to their career, maybe because they don't have the privilege of having an open space for it. They've just got to work two jobs and grind it out. But for a lot of people, it's a real relevant question. You know, can you find work that you both love doing and you're very talented at, which serves the world in ways you care about?
Yeah. Well, I definitely have a pro-social orientation. You know, I thought that I was going to end up working in politics back when I was in high school, early college. I think that ultimately there's a lot about life that's just really unpleasant for a lot of people. And so if you can do something that is even just a little fulfilling, supportive, enjoyable, delivering that to other people, I think I totally have a value on.
I just learned something about you. You're trying to help people have an enjoyable experience.
Helping people have fun, I think, is like way underrated.
I would add one more thing that I just think is true about you. You value, I think, people understanding things correctly.
Oh, man, totally. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. You're like, you have a superpower of skepticism, doubt, and healthy doubt. And, but it's in the service of, you know, useful, accurate understanding of things.
Yes.
And you care about that in 100%. The world. And you think the world would be better if there was more widely distributed, grounding in reality.
More widely distributed, accurate content. Absolutely. Yes. Strong cosine.
God, who wrote Neuromancer? God, the name, William Gibson. Okay, take it from
here.
Yeah, I want to paraphrase this great quote from William Gibson, who says that essentially, the future has arrived. It's just not evenly distributed.
Mm.
The way I would say it, your version of it, is that the truth has arrived. Yeah. It's just not evenly distributed yet.
Man, isn't that the truth right there?
and you want to be in the service of that wider distribution.
Very little grinds my gears as much as misinformation. That is the truth right there. So
yeah, especially if it's deliberate.
Yeah, you know? I think that's well identified, Dad.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
And so maybe to broaden this out a little bit, this is a kind of inquiry that a person could go through. And that maybe would have been useful for me to go through in more of a deliberate way when I was 25. Again, those questions of what do you really value? What do you feel capable at or really talented at?
Yeah.
And sorry, what was the third one, Dad?
And then what do you love doing? What do you really enjoy?
Of course, yeah. Values, in all categories. Enjoyment, yeah. And then talent. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think, man, if I'd been on the receiving end of me.
Yeah.
Just asking you.
Doing that kind of a deliberate.
Putting you to it.
Yeah.
It would have so saved so much trouble and really, really helped move me kind of in the mainstream of life's possibility.
Totally. And also, there were times when I was 23, 24, where you did kind of put the screws to me in that sort of a way. And sometimes we went through that kind of an inquiry. And I just really wasn't ready for it in that way. Or maybe I was ready for it in some kinds of ways, but in terms of actually doing something about it, I wasn't really ready for. Or maybe I just felt sort of uncertain about some of the answers to those questions. And I'm just saying all of that to say that there could be a lot of anxiety associated with this kind of a process, maybe tied to some of those concerns that people have about being really successful when they land at 30, 40 years old. And just to appreciate that that can be an anxiety-provoking process for people, I think can be good here. Just give yourself a little self-compassion throughout it.
Yeah, absolutely. Right on. Did you have another one? Yourself?
Oh, I have so many, Dad. But okay, here's one. And I thought about starting with this one because I think it's so fundamental.
Yeah.
But I'm glad we started where we did. Appreciate that you're going to change a lot. And that's a good thing. And let it be a good thing. Now's the time to hold your views lightly, to try a lot of different things on, and to get a sense of what the answers to those three questions are. What are you good at? What do you like? And what do you value? And the only way that you figure out what the answers to those questions are is by trying things and by being open to shifting your view. I entered my 20s with all kinds of view. Rick would be more than happy to tell you about some of them. Views about myself, about the world around me, about other people. A lot of views about the way that things were supposed to be. A lot of internalized rules that I was carrying around. 70 to 90% of these ended up just being wrong. They were either wholly untrue on their face, but that was really a subset of them. Most of them, it was more that there was some aspect of them that wasn't totally true, or there was some aspect of them that I needed to lighten up about a little bit. Now, I ultimately ended up being able to shift these views, and that was great. Totally transformed my life. But man, it would have made my life easier if I had been more receptive to changing a little bit more quickly. You can treat yourself as more of an ongoing process rather than a final product. And I think that I just had a lot of attachment to being a particular kind of way when I was 19 or 22 or 24 years old. And my life really started to change when I started conducting these little experiments. Where I went, okay, what would it be like if I were a little bit more relaxed and a little bit more open to things not being exactly the way that I wanted them to be? What would it be like if I took the first step in relationships more often? What would it be like if I asserted myself in slightly different ways? And this is the best time to do that, in part because you have a relatively small number of attachments. And the more attachments that we have, the more pressure those attachments exert on us to keep on being the way that they are used to us being. So now is a great time to experiment with this.
That's great. And that broader point too about experimentation and play and trying things on. You know, we could sit on the sidelines forever. Do I really want to get in the pool? What would it be like? Well, stick your foot in.
Yeah, see get how in the feels, pool, man. You know? Totally. Touch the water. Is the water cold? Is the water warm? You can make a choice from there.
Do you like it or not? Yeah. Exactly right. What I'm going to add now, I got sucked into some serious backwaters. Mm. Beware backwaters. That would be my headline. Beware backwaters. Getting sucked into a relationship that's just, it's okay, but it's not really great, and time's ticking away. Sucked into half a cult or a job that's just not it. And you know it's not it, but on any given day, it's just not bad enough to leave. You know, you and I have talked about, or you used the analogy, I think, of the tepid bathwater. It's okay. It's not so cold you want to get out of the tub, but it's not really what you want. And I just think that's a really useful thing for people to think about, because I did a lot of stuff where I went, I'll try it out. But I blinked and 6 months it had gone by. And I blinked and then it was 18 months and mm-hmm. I was really starting to get antsy. Okay, it was time to go. But man, I knew enough 3 months in to get out of that thing. So beware backwaters.
I think that's a great piece of advice. And just because you've mentioned it twice here, Dad, do you want to give a 30-second explanation of what you mean by half a cult? Because I'm sure there are people listening who are just like, what the heck is this guy talking about right now? You've mentioned it on the podcast in the past, but it was a long time ago.
Yeah. I'm not going to name any names, but I very voluntarily, with my eyes wide open, stepped into a human potential personal growth-y kind of organization that's no longer around in my mid-20s. And it had a charismatic leader. It had lots of really valuable stuff. Oftentimes people are drawn to these organizations because there's a lot of value there. Anyone who's had any kind of history like my own is nodding here and knows exactly what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And it's very often your virtues that keep you involved because you keep looking to your own faults, you keep looking to your own responsibility, you keep focusing on your own learning curve. And there's enough value on any given day, you know, to keep you involved. And then your identity starts getting very sucked into the group. And as a stubborn, highly autonomous, determined, individualistic kind of person by temperament and culture, I was humbled and really schooled by how influenced I was in retrospect by conformism to the group and the dynamic around that. So that's another thing for people to think about. What were the kind of cultic, true believer-ish systems, sometimes religious, sometimes political, sometimes cultural, that you kind of got sucked into? Sometimes it's a friend group, some kind of thing you got sucked into.
Yeah.
So that was for me a major backwater.
Super interesting. And yeah, I think that a lot of people get pulled into situations that have at least a little of the flavor you're describing.
Yeah, that's why I call it half.
Yeah. And man, they can be a black hole. Totally. It has some traits, you know. It might not get the full diagnosis, but it looks like a duck, walks like a duck a little bit here.
Can I add a category of backwater?
Sure, totally.
That often is the case for people in their 20s where you have a partner, boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever, who is charismatic, appealing, there's some rewards there. And yet over time, you get smaller and smaller in the relationship and you keep walking away. They're trying to improve you. You know, it's not that their fashion tips are bad or their character education is bad, but that too is a kind of a backwater.
Yeah, you can really get sucked into some relationship environments that are not healthy for you and are just not supportive of your long-term development. Absolutely. And maybe attached to that, particularly for people who are wired a little bit like me, where there is a lot of that strong sense of, like I was saying, I had a lot of views that I walked into my early 20s with. Be receptive to useful feedback. But the key word there is useful. If you consistently receive a piece of feedback from the groups that you're a part of, your friends, your family, your romantic partners, there are two options. The first is that they're more or less making a good point. The second is that they're all out to get you. Both of those possibilities require a response from you. You know, you either need to find a different group of people or you should contemplate changing your behavior. One of the biggest mistakes I made in my late teens and early 20s was not rapidly correcting around the feedback that I was consistently receiving from different groups of people. And I would have spared myself just a lot of trouble by being more open to changing aspects of my behavior in response to that feedback. Now, the multi-situational part of this is a huge part of it. It's actually a big part of diagnosis in the DSM is that symptoms have to present in a bunch of different environments. So that way you know that symptomology is not just tied to that environment. So if it's just one person or just one situation that's telling you this, that is not useful feedback. But if it comes up over and over and over again as a theme in your life, at least be willing to take a hard look at it.
That's great advice.
As somebody who's really struggled with skin issues like acne over the course of my life, I know just how great it is to not stress about what's going on with your skin. That's why I'm excited to tell you about today's sponsor, OneSkin. Their products make it easy to keep your skin healthy while looking and feeling your best. No complicated routine, no multi-step protocols, just simple, scientifically validated solutions. The secret is OneSkin's proprietary OS01 peptide. It's the first ingredient proven to work with the aging cells that cause lines, wrinkles, and thinning skin. And as somebody who's used plenty of complicated routines in the past, I love the simplicity of using their OS01 face topical peptide. Just cleanse, pat your skin dry, and apply it twice daily. Get started today with 15% off using code BEINGWELL at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code BEINGWELL. After your purchase, they'll ask you where you came from, and please support the show and tell them that we sent you. If you're like me, you've probably started to pay closer attention to your long-term health as you've aged. Turning 35 was a bit of a wake-up call for me, and I'm always looking for good sources of information because it's often really difficult to separate fact from fiction when it comes to our physical health. We had Dr. Tim Spector on the podcast a few years ago. He's a professor of genetic epidemiology and the scientific co-founder at Zoe. And the Zoe Science and Nutrition podcast is truly one of the best resources out there when it comes to this stuff. With the help of world-leading scientists, they help you make smarter health choices every week. And you don't have to just take my word for it. Avid podcast fan Stephanie's Apple review says the Zoe Science and Nutrition podcast is a life-changing, science-based, myth-busting podcast. That's a must-listen for anyone who eats food and wants to understand how it affects their body. With the Zoe Science and Nutrition podcast, you can join Stephanie and millions of others transforming their health. Find it wherever you listen to podcasts.
So here's another one from me, and I'll call it Beware the Swerve. Something happened for me, and I think it tends to happen for a lot of people. They're naturally good at something, let's say, but they swerve away from really investing in it. And that swerve can take different forms. I actually had a realization in my maybe 30s about the degree to which I often would swerve away from investing in myself in terms of what I'm naturally oriented toward, being a therapist, essentially, because I had this belief that I should be more like a Renaissance man, that I partly acquired that from science fiction I had read, that I should be multi-talented. But if you're going to be a Renaissance man, if you're going to be the Swiss Army knife of people, that swerves you away from really perfecting your screwdriver, even though you're wildly talented at
being a screwdriver.
Putting in screws.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, exactly right. So that's one kind of a swerve. Another kind of swerve is you feel like you belong in a certain group. You have that capability, or this is your tribe. These are your cut from the same cloth, kindred spirit folks. But in you, you just kind of swerve away because you don't want to risk rejection from the people you really care about. Swerve away. Or you know you really ought to do something, but you swerve away from it because it's what your parents told you you ought to do. You know, like in my case, save money. And so I just swerved away from that, right? But where the swerve?
I wonder what your take on this is, Dad. In my experience, and also watching some friends struggle with this from time to time, sometimes that swerve happens because we know that there are good outcomes that could await for us on the other side of diligent effort. But there's a stress that's associated with that because now the pressure's on. There's a pressure to actually create the thing that's in your head. And for people who have a lot of taste or perfectionistic tendencies, however you want to talk about it, there's a safety to the idea or the possibility just staying in between your ears because you never have to find out whether or not you could actually do it, you know? And so I wonder about that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a kind of swerve. You know, it's people writing for the drawer, as they say.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I've seen you crank out book after book over there. I co-authored one with you, but as I've encountered the possibility of writing something in even more of a long format than the writing that I'm doing on Substack or something like that, that absolutely comes up as a thing for me. The pressure to produce something of sufficient quality, the feeling that people will have, could have an anticipation or an expectation associated with it, you know, whatever it is. You know, that's a real thing, and that's real wrestling that you do internally with those kinds of issues or kinds of emotions. I suppose I'm asking if you have any therapistly or dadly advice on any of this, not just for me, but for people in general.
Well, for one, I totally relate to it. I kind of talked about it. You know, there are different proverbs like this, you know, Japanese proverb, the nail that stands out gets hammered down. Or the tall poppy syndrome, like from Australia, you're going to get cut off. If your head comes above the weeds, a shaming attack. And this is where I think that people can really help themselves by generating a little bit of what you're thinking about, right? Mm-hmm. Write that poem, sing that song, share it with a few people, kind of get used to it, get used to the pool. There you are. You're putting your foot in the water. It's okay. You're fine. And then keep going. So that can actually really help. Do little things. I mean, it's just with regard to a book, you know, here's a question for people. Can you write 2 pages? Can you write 500 words? Most people say, yeah, I can do that. I could write a 2-page thing on something, 2 pages. Okay, do that 100 times. That's a strong draft of your book. So little things add up over time. That's the thing. And in the process of generating those little things, it'll surface a lot of psychological material that can be healed along the way. So you're getting win-win. You're generating your output. You're producing content while clearing out the crud in the basement of your mind. Another is to form a partnership, get buddies, you know, who also are doing the same thing, like a writing group or a songwriting group, a screenwriting group. Anything really to do something collaboratively that really, really helps for people. And then there's some more existential perspectives, which have to do with the fact that good news, bad news, walk through a library or walk through, as I did today, a used bookstore.
Mm.
You realize that books are like messages in a bottle. Most of them never really hit the big time, but they're all worth writing. They're worth writing for the author. Mm. And if you publish a book, as you have, you are in a different category. And that category can be meaningful for you, even if people are not reading the book you wrote.
Yeah, that framework of the self as an author or a dancer or a whatever it is. Like, and you get to claim that title once you generate something that fits into that category. And it's a badge of a certain level of effort, which I think is great.
Yeah, including one that's externally referenced and meanwhile internally referenced, you know you said your piece.
Yeah.
You're not going to be lying there on your deathbed thinking to yourself, darn, I really wish I had crafted that message, tucked it into the bottle, and thrown it into the darn ocean, you know?
And from there, who knows? Anyway. To your point, like you cast the stone and it lands where it lands, but you do your best when you throw it. Totally.
Yeah. And lighten up about the results, because the truth is most of it won't matter that much to the world altogether after a little time has passed. There are a handful of books that become real classics. They really reach a lot of people. Great. Most of them won't, but there you are. Think about how many songs get made and they just poof. You know, oh, that was a nice song. Think about the effort that went into recording that song in a studio at pretty high quality. And 5 years later, 10 years later, who's humming that song? But it doesn't mean we shouldn't have done it. So it's like bad news, good news. Bad news, much of the time, it doesn't really matter. Good news, much of the time, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
So you might as well do what you want.
And maybe attach that to that notion of, you know, it doesn't matter, so we can kind of lighten up about it in some ways. I have one more big picture 20s thing, and then I've got a few about relationships, maybe a little subcategory. If you have one or two about those, Dad, I'm sure as a couples counselor, maybe there's something that's coming to mind. I'm trying to find the right way to put this, because I want to put this sort of delicately. All right, maybe I won't put it too delicately, and I'll just be sort of blunt about it. Nihilistic disenchantment is for losers.
Wow, that's a bumper sticker.
Period. Nihilistic disenchantment is for total losers. And here's what I mean by that. It is totally understandable as a younger person to look around at the world right now and just go, what the fuck, man? I mean, it's a mess out there. And it's really understandable that you could be somebody entering that world and just going, the game is rigged. It's all messed up. Nothing that I do is really going to impact that in any kind of large scale way. So, you know, throw your hands up, have a reasonably good time with your life, and just, you know, see you later, man. That is understandable. That is an understandable response to real circumstances in the world. It is also the only response that dooms you to failure.
Yeah.
If you don't play, you can't win. So it becomes very, very important when circumstances are as they are in the world, and as they are is pretty messed up, to really increasingly focus again and again and again on what you can actually do within those messed up circumstances. And it's counterintuitive because the more confined we are, the more our effort matters in terms of our outcomes. If somebody has no constraints on them whatsoever, if they are a trust fund baby dropping into the world, they're probably going to be okay regardless of what they do, right? They're just going to be okay. They were dealt the golden hand. They have four aces. They're going to lay it down. They're going to win the money. That's the way it goes. If you are dealt a crap hand, playing it skillfully is much more highly leveraged for you in terms of your outcomes in life. That tension is really, really hard for people. And it's exacerbated by a natural countercultural lean in younger people. And every younger generation always, like, this is the way of the world. It's just a developmental thing. And if you're lucky, you'll live long enough to become the boring, problematic establishment, okay? But you need to funnel that energy somewhere. And hopefully you funnel it into making life as good as it can possibly be for you, whatever that means for you. And that can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people, but it's the doing that matters. And that's why it's so important to have a heavy focus on agency wherever you can. What can I do today to make my life a little bit better? So that's my rant.
Well, Leonard Cohen would agree with you when he sang, ready, ring the bells that still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. So ring the bells you still can ring.
That's a tighter summary of my 3-minute monologue there, Dad. But okay, so that's sort of something I've been thinking about a lot recently, in part reflecting on my own life when I was 23 and really looking around, you know, as a millennial generation person entering the world at a moment in time where we're coming out of a financial collapse and the whole thing. And really just kind of having so many moments where I just sort of shrugged and went like, what's the point? You know, but to find the freedom in that in some ways, as opposed to finding the depression in it, I think can be really helpful for people.
Yeah, that's very interesting. So I would offer two suggestions. The first suggestion, the way I would phrase it is, set yourself up to win, your future self. So think about the you you're going to be in a year, let's say. What are the capabilities? What are the relationships? What are the resources of various kinds that you could slowly but surely, one shovelful, one bit a day, set that person up to be really advantaged? And often you don't know specifically what would really serve that you 1 year from now that you will be. So it's very helpful to focus on general purpose, inner strengths, like mindfulness, self-compassion, knowing how to grow, the strength of strengths, because it's the one that grows the other ones, things like that, emotional intelligence, grit, tenacity, happiness, perspective, right? General purpose strengths that are the trunk of the tree, no matter what big limbs or branches extend out that you don't yet know, right? But if you keep shoring up the trunk of your tree, then it will be a very strong base for whatever it is you want to do. Second, there is this tendency that I think of as a strange kind of grandiosity that thinks that your time in life is unique. There's a term called millenarianism. It's the notion that at the millennium or at some time, everything will change. There will be Armageddon. There will be the aliens will descend. The masters will come out of the caves. Something will change radically. And, you know, the average person today is living better than the average person at any previous year in history.
Yeah.
As far back as you want to go, including last year. So it's shocking the number of really positive developments that are occurring alongside really scary ones, like just the ongoing reality of massive nuclear weapons, or the fact that, you know, humans are dumping 50 billion tons a year of CO2 equivalents into the sky. That's a lot. So, yeah, but there's this way in which I think you're going to be here in 20 years. How do you want to set yourself up for the world that you'll be living into?
So as we get to the end here and...
You've got some more.
Yeah, we've talked about relationships a little tangentially maybe throughout the conversation, but we haven't talked about specific relationship stuff that much. And relationships are such a huge part of that moment in time for so many people. So I have just a couple of quick ones, and I don't know if you want to just give a little reflection on them, Dad, as I say them. So at the end of high school, I got into dancing, ballroom dancing. And I danced pretty seriously throughout college and then for a little while after that. And this meant that most of the people that I was bumping into in the world were people who shared my activity. And those were naturally my friend groups. They were the people that I was around. They were the people I was doing stuff with. And that's the way that most relationships work. Most of our relationships with other people are initially based on a shared activity. We're doing the same thing that they're doing. The relationships that last are going to be based on shared values, not a shared activity. Put simply, are you friends with this person because you really like them and think they're really great, or because it's convenient for you to be friends with them? And you can substitute out friends for in a relationship with this person, hanging out with this person a lot. Are they a good influence on you? Is that actually the kind of person that you want to be around? Or have you just been sort of put into proximity with them and it's a little inconvenient to slide out of that proximity for whatever reason? And man, there were so many situations where I was just friends with so many people, and I mean friends even in kind of a loose way, who I didn't really have a lot in common with from a values standpoint, but they were very convenient. And that created often a superficiality to the relationships. And a sense inside myself that I wasn't really getting my needs met by them in terms of what I actually wanted from other people.
That's deep, Forrest.
Oh,
and
you.
Listening to that inner voice, right? Mm-hmm. Rather than not listening to it, that told you, I'm not really getting what I want here in this relationship. Yeah.
So that for me would have been a big helpful one. And then another one, maybe this is just for me, for young Forrest here. You get to decide what your relationships with people look like. We have a typical model of relationship that exists in the culture. And that is a particular structure of relationship, of a way of being in the world with other people. You don't actually have to do things that way. You can decide what your relationships with people look like. You can decide the level of vulnerability you want to have in your relationship, the things you want to talk about, the things you don't want to talk about. You get to choose all of this stuff. You do not have to buy the boilerplate that you are sold by the Disney movie when you are 8 years old, okay? You can opt into a very different way of being with other people. And so just kind of keeping an open mind about relationships, I think would have been incredibly helpful for me when I was 23-ish years old.
That's really great. You know, as we finish here.
Yeah. Any last reflections, Dad?
Yeah. I am minded of what it feels like to be 21, 25, 28. And it's like you're throwing the football 50 yards, 50 years down the field, whoosh, to the future you at 71, in my case, who will catch that ball 50 years later. In other words, how are we setting up our future selves? But flip the other way. We've mainly talked about the first way. How do you set up your future self? But the other way, looking back, appreciating your 20-year-old self, yourself in your 20s, how hard that person worked, the mistakes they avoided, the sincerity of their efforts, the cool things about them, why you would like them. I think that's a really good exercise for people as well, to spend some time in appreciating their younger selves. And you can do that by decade, by year, you kind of stage of life. You can go all the way back to being to really young. It's a beautiful exercise. I can look back and to see that guy, Rick, in his 20s. I bet you can look back and see that guy, Forrest, in his 20s, and you can just express a lot of appreciation for a lot of aspects of that younger you.
Totally. I think that's a great note to close our conversation today on. So, Dad, thanks so much for doing this with me. I loved this one. This one felt really alive and just a lot of good stuff there. A lot of good stuff that I certainly wish that I had known back in the day. And I hope our listeners got some value out of.
Yeah, me as well. Maybe we'll do this also with different kinds of people. I wonder about the degree to which gender my chip thinks.
Plays perhaps into some of the things. We're two guys talking about this totally.
Yeah, and it really touched my heart as well.
I had a great time during this conversation with Rick. It's one of my favorite ones that we've recorded recently. I think in part because it just felt so alive and lived in and real for me as a person, somebody in their mid-30s who has been doing a lot of reflecting and looking back at the person that I was when I was in my early 20s, and just thinking about what really would have made a difference for me back then. And we talked about a lot during this episode, so I'm mostly going to focus on recapping some of the big themes and the ideas that we were exploring. One of the big tensions that can come up for people during this moment in time is the desire to have it all, the desire to have total freedom, and also to find meaningful relationships, the desire to make a lot of money and also play and explore and have fun. And it can be tough to reconcile that tension. You're pulled in these different directions simultaneously. And sometimes what happens for people is they just don't make a choice at all. They kick the can down the road and down the road and down the road. And in deferring that choice, they become trapped. They wake up when they're 27, as I kind of did, and realize that they have neither fully set themselves up for success or really had all of the fun that they wanted to have. And that's a tough place to be, which is one of the reasons that Rick and I emphasized over and over again, the value of the development that you do now, whenever now is for you. Right now, you're listening to this. This is the youngest you will ever be. You are never getting younger than this again. So any work that you put in today, tomorrow, over the next 6 months is going to compound over the rest of your life. And that compounding feature of it is particularly important for people who are in their 20s because you just have so much life left for that work to compound over. Now, at the same time, this wasn't intended as a grind set, productivity oriented, just really do all you can in your 20s so you're successful in your 30s kind of conversation. All of the truth of the just reality that the work you put in now compounds over time needs to be paired with, for starters, some self-compassion and some understanding that all of our journeys are a little bit different here. And if you wake up at 32 and you don't feel like you've got it all figured out, well, join the club. Very few people do. And also an appreciation that now really is a unique time in your life in terms of the amount of freedom that you have. And one of the ways that you can bring these two desires together, this desire to have fun and be free, along with this desire to really set yourself up for success in the future, is by doing some internal inquiry. Internal skills are things that we can develop at any moment in time while we're doing other fun stuff in the world around us. One of the challenges that people often face in their 20s, and man, this was a real challenge for me, is not having a strong sense of where they're going in life, not really having a feel for what they want or what they care about or where they want to end up. And when you don't know the destination, it's really easy to get trapped in various backwaters. That was something that Rick talked about. And so he shared a really great process that can help you figure out what might be a great fit for you long term. And that's thinking in terms of the intersection of three different circles. First, what do you have some talent at? Second, what do you really enjoy doing? And then third, what do your values connect to? Now, not everyone can think in this way. They might just be in a position where they need to maximize the amount of money that they make, and that's kind of the end of the story. But if that's the case, then you can think about how to fit those three circles together in other areas of your life, maybe not a professional arena, but more of a personal one. Another big theme in the advice that we shared was openness to change, being receptive to receiving feedback from other people, to finding different groups of people by identifying what you actually value as opposed to what is just sort of convenient for you to do right now. Thinking of yourself as a changeable process rather than a finalized product. Becoming more self-aware, holding views about yourself a little bit more lightly. These are all ways that we can emphasize the importance of good change in our life. You're going to change a lot because we all change a lot over the course of our lives. And the question is, can you be receptive to that change and do what you can to incline that change in the directions that are going to lead to the most good stuff for you over the course of hopefully this long life? So I hope you enjoyed today's conversation. Even if you're not 25 years old, I hope that you got something of value out of it. If you did, if you're watching on YouTube, you can leave a comment down below. If you're listening to the podcast, it would be great if you could leave a rating and a positive review for us. That really helps us out. And if there was something that you were thinking about that you wanted to share with me, you can also reach me at contact@beingwellpodcast.com. If you've been listening to the show for a while and you haven't subscribed yet, please take a moment to do that now. And if you'd like to support us in other ways, you can find us on Patreon. It's patreon.com/beingwellpodcast. And for just a couple of dollars a month, you can support the show and receive a bunch of bonuses in return. Until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.